Hi everyone, this is Evan Murray. Evan Murray. This is Music Industry Insights. You can get a hold of me at evan@musicindustryins.net. evan@musicindustryins.net. You can write me questions, comments, write me for consulting, ask me questions about the different podcasts I've done or things I'm doing in my career or about the events that are going on in Sweden, Canada, or India, or whatever I'm up to at the time. This podcast you're listening to right now is based on the country of Ukraine. I talked to Darcia, one of the head ladies for the Ukrainian export office, and she works in, you know, trying to find opportunities and build relationships for Ukrainian musicians and artists. So some things about Ukraine, like I actually went to Ukraine. I went to Darcia's event, Music Export Ukraine, in 2019, I think, in the summer of 2019, with this COVID thing, I can't remember. But anyways, it was like before the pandemic hit, obviously. And I went there and I had kind of a culture shock experience a little bit because I was born in Eastern Canada, but I grew up in Western Canada, and Western Canada has a large Eastern European influence. So there's a lot of Ukrainian culture, German culture, Polish culture, Russian culture, but Ukrainian really sticks out. I mean, in the province of Alberta and Saskatchewan, like on the prairies where all the farmers are, they actually have there's Ukrainian radio station. There's also villages, Ukrainian village, where they recreated an entire village that was based on how the settlers would have lived that came from Ukraine. So there's this big attachment between Ukraine and Western Canada. And when I went to Ukraine, it was just so nothing like I understood it. No one calls their grandma and grandpa Baba and Guido in Ukraine. Ukrainians don't eat pierogies. So surprise. Of course, kubasag, garlic sausage, but that's everywhere in the world. But I mean, again, these things are Polish, actually, right? So it's really strange in Western Canada how, Eastern European Canadians, or say, second generation or third generation, fourth generation kind of thing, how they identify with being Ukrainian. But when I'm in Ukraine, it's just so conflicting. I don't know. It's interesting. And I mean, the history of Ukraine is probably one of the greatest stories ever told. I mean, greatest and most tragic. The amount of things that the country of Ukraine has been through is just incredible. And again, it's tragic. You're talking about a nuclear meltdown. You're talking about the Soviet Revolution. I mean, so many people died and starved to death. It's one of the most horrific things that happened in human history. Also, World War II. I mean, Ukraine was a main stage for a lot of the major battles. There's a lot of things I could just talk on about because it is such an incredible place. And when I was there, I really got a feeling of the culture being kind of they're really proud of their military. They're really proud of being, survivors, really proud of they're proud of their culture. And it's really incredible stuff. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things too. A lot of Ukrainians, they speak Russian. You know, they don't speak Ukrainian. And this is a whole other kind of political thing and cultural thing that I don't fully have a grasp on, so I'm not going to dig too far into that. But Ukraine is definitely something worth checking out. Like, it's something worth reading about, especially if you're interested in history and culture. And just those two things alone are just so incredibly interesting. I mean, you could read books and books about Ukraine. But anyways, this is not about that. So I just ranted for like 5 minutes about what this podcast is not about. This podcast is actually about the Ukrainian music industry. And we have Darcia with us, who is one of the head ladies at, you know, Music Export, or Export Music Ukraine, as I had stated, or Music Export Ukraine. And they have a, you know, they have a like a networking showcase event. And when I went there, they actually attached it to a massive festival called Atlas Weekend. It was so amazing. Probably the best festival I've ever been to in my life, to be honest. Like, it was incredible. The food was incredible. I think Ukraine might be the best food I've ever had in my life. And I mean that, like, sincerely. Like, there's just a lot of good food there. And this festival was, like, full of it. You know, like, I ate so much. I barely even drank alcohol at the festival. I ate so much food. And they had such a massive lineup at that festival, too. Like, you know, super famous people from the 90s and 2000s. And, you know, tons of popular Ukrainian bands. And I think, you know, there was like 9 stages. It was huge. It was just gigantic. And Ukraine is not a small country either. Like, you're talking about 44 million people, you know. Like, I'm just talking so much about this because I did stay there for a while. Like, I think I stayed in Ukraine for like 3 weeks. I mostly stayed in Kyiv the whole time, and I did a lot of sightseeing. I traveled around the city. I rented like an apartment for a little while. So I went to like the grocery store to get groceries. You know, I kind of did normal things. Maybe I was only there for like 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks. I can't remember, but I'd have to look at my calendar. Maybe I should just pause this and go look, but it doesn't matter. But I'm excited about Eastern Europe because Eastern Europe is kind of like a wild card in the music industry because, you know, the thing is that obviously, like in Eastern Europe, the countries are, say, not in the best, like they're not fully developed as, say, like, you know, a place like England or, you know, United States or something like that. But the thing is, there's tremendous value there. I mean, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of music business. I think it's really interesting to take a look at, actually. It's really interesting to dive into this and just, I really picked Darcy's brain. I think we had like a, well, you'll see, I think our conversation was like an hour and a half or so. And I just really wanted to know all I could because Ukraine is definitely an attractive country when it comes to when I think about, you know, doing music business. So anyways, take what you can out of this and extract what you need. And enjoy it. Darcia, now I can't pronounce your last name as well, so I'm going to give you, please introduce yourself, Darcia, and it's nice to see you.
Yeah, hi everyone. Yes, you actually nailed it. It's Darcia Tarkovska. From Ukraine, and I am a co-founder of Music Export Ukraine. Basically, we are an independent initiative, but we do help Ukrainian emerging artists to promote themselves abroad.
Okay, excellent. And I guess the thing is, what I like to do is find out a little bit about the country, you know, that you're in. And so can you tell me, like what's the population of the Ukraine? And tell us, too, like, is the music industry in Ukraine, is it spread out evenly across the country, or is it situated mostly around Kyiv? Like, how does that work? Mm-hmm.
Well, formally, the country is quite big. We have around 42 million people living in the country. However, when it comes to the music industry itself, yes, definitely Kyiv is the heart of the music industry, and we have maybe the most of the artists and facilities and opportunities located in the capital. But we also have some other key cities that would be Lviv, Kharkiv, Odessa, and Dnipro. So these are also quite big cities, and they have their own local music communities facilitating the network and stuff. But in the majority of the cases, these are five main cities you need to know about.
Okay, so that would be like five main cities that if a band was to come in and touring.
Yeah.
Or I'll get, you know, also Ukrainian artists, you know, they're kind of situating themselves around these five areas. Like, what about towns and such? Like when bands are developing in the Ukraine, are they touring just major cities, or are they also visiting towns on the countryside as well?
It really depends, because like formally, when you are focusing on bigger cities, you have more visibility and more chance to like draw attention to everything that you do. But formally, there are no limitation on going and participating in any sort of festivals or other activities. We're doing concerts in smaller towns. It's just the facilities are less efficient and quite outdated. And it's also connected to the people's taste. Like, I can barely imagine some wild psychedelic indie rock music happening in a very small Ukrainian town. Like, people wouldn't buy it. Although we actually have a few success stories where artists playing pop music started their careers playing all over the country, like in each small town and even villages. And absolutely, they nailed it, and they made people fall in love with their music simply because it was quite mainstream, comprehensive, and like easy consuming, you know?
That's really, you know, that's really interesting, because I guess this falls on the cultural aspect as well, where how you're mentioning like kind of like maybe people in smaller areas aren't as used to like, you know, modernized music. And I think that's really interesting, actually, because even though the advent of the internet, maybe people are still holding close to their culture. Is that how you would kind of see that?
In a way, but it's also connected to the consumption approach. Like, definitely in smaller towns, we have more like older people, and they're still relying on radios and on TV channels. Mm. And these kind of channels are still into mainstream, very simple and basic pop music. So it's really hard to like facilitate the how do you call it? The music taste.
Right. Okay. And I guess that, like, you know, how do Ukrainians find their favorite bands, the like modern Ukrainians these days, like now? What's the process of them? Like, how do they find their favorite music? Like, what are people doing when they, like, what's the streaming services? How are people are, I guess the thing is, like, I'm trying to ask a really simple question that I'm making very complicated. But how do typical Ukrainians find their favorite music these days?
Yeah, well, as I said, it really depends on the age. If we're talking about teenagers and people of my age, definitely internet, to be more specific. Yes, that would be streaming services. The key ones in Ukraine would be Spotify, YouTube Music, Apple Music, Deezer. So these are the key ones. And we actually got Spotify in Ukraine only last year in 2020. So it's quite fresh in Ukraine. But yeah, that's one of the sources. I think word of mouth plays a huge role, because when somebody recommends you some good music, you tend to rely on that. So social media and spreading the word naturally also plays a very important role. Then we have some music online media or even lifestyle media who can also recommend and promote music in some sort of way. So that would be it. I think in terms of music media, it's also worth being mentioned that we actually also use Telegram. So there are quite a lot of Telegram channels specified particularly to highlight some cool new music coming out. So that's also one of the sources where some teenagers and young adults can find some cool tunes.
So tell me about that a little bit. Like what is Telegram exactly?
So Telegram is an online messenger. However, there are two ways the way you can use it. Option number one, you can chat like DMs, basically like an Instagram or Facebook Messenger. The other way around to use Telegram is to create your own channel. That would be like your small media where you have your own feed and people can subscribe to your channel. And see what you're posting.
Okay, so it's like a social media app. Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah, in a way.
And like when you talk about how people are finding music nowadays and how they're using apps and these kind of things, like what was the medium 10 years ago and before? Like what's the major changes? I mean, obviously it's the internet, but the internet existed now. I mean, social media has been around for 20 years now or something. Like, what were people doing 10 years ago or 15 years ago?
I guess in terms of the internet, the main difference is the consumption approach, because definitely 10 years ago, that was 2011, right? I don't think that streaming services were that popular, to be honest. So we had huge music piracy. I mean, it is still here when it comes to cultural consumption of cultural content. But when it comes to me, I vividly remember that 10 years ago, if I'm in love with an album, I simply have to search for a website to download it and maybe upload it to my MP3 player or something like that, so I could have literally access to it.
And how would you find it? Like, would you find it through friends or would you find it through like some advertisement? Like, how would you have found the artists that you really liked when you were younger?
I think it would be pretty much the same approach, like either friends, recommendations, YouTube, music blogs. To be more specific, I think LiveJournal actually was still a thing around 10 years ago. Although it was already slowly dying, but it was still quite a thing. That's the way it went. And then the moment you're willing to download an album, you simply had to Google it and find some music piracy websites. And there were plenty of those.
The reason why I asked that is because like the West, like living, you know, like I'm originally from Canada, and in the West, it was such a massive transition from like music television and radio into this like, you know, obscurity of downloading. And then from there was like apps created where the only time you were finding bands was basically through word of mouth, you know, or word of words on the internet, you know? So there was like the whole entire infrastructure that the music industry had collapsed, and it became kind of like the Wild West where, like, you know, growing up, you were kind of told what was popular, you know, or you were given the insight. And just things have changed so radically. Like in the past, bands, like if they got a number one hit song, that would pretty much go across like all the radio stations. They would be hitting number one. Yeah. And nowadays it's not like that either. Like you can have a hit song in like, you know, the South Side of New York and like on the, you know, the radio station in Detroit, like they never even heard of you, you know? So it's like it's really fractured. So I'm just wondering from like your standpoint being in Ukraine, you know, how that was kind of relatable.
it is actually quite relatable. I think pretty much the same things are happening in Ukraine as well.
Okay. That, it is interesting. I mean, we're kind of in such a wild domain of the music industry where it's kind of like, it's such an entrepreneurial marketplace, I guess, you know, and bubbles, like these network bubbles of people. So, but let me ask you about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, but actually you really need to be an extrovert to keep this thing going. And well, but that's true, because we're talking about word of mouth, and it's really hard to keep word of mouth happening if you're an introvert and you're pretending like you're not into people anymore.
Right. And also, I mean, the other thing about, I mean, I had a, one of the bands I interviewed yesterday, they're from Scotland, and they were talking about the whole entire, it's like a popularity race, you know, where it's like, there's this guy who got really big in the UK, and it was from, like, you know, he likes to dress like a girl and he really likes to put out this punk rock image visually, but he plays pop music. And then he does these outlandish things. Like, he released a single and he like got on this boat going down like the, some river. And then he shot this like imagery, you know, like a hologram image of his album over Buckingham Palace. And it's just like, so over the top. It's, you know, and it's like, so it's like, it's almost like you're an artist, but then you're also like a nutcase, you know, where you have to like, you're trying to just get attention, you know? And I mean,
yeah, yeah, true. And then it also fascinates me the way everything snowballs as soon as you're not just a musician, but also a character. For example, in Ukraine, we have a hip hop sensation. Her name is Alona Alona. She used to be a kindergarten in a very small Ukrainian town. And then she decided she's into rap and she's willing to do some hip hop stuff. And so she did. And she's absolutely amazing. She quickly became really popular in Ukraine. Like, her debut video went viral in days. But then what also fascinates me is that the way she started doing her international career. Actually, her European agent, at that time they didn't meet, she simply saw the video, she liked it, she posted on Facebook, and everybody was crazy. And they were like, is that your new artist? Tell us everything about her. And she was like, no, I just posted that video. I find it hilarious. And it was a matter of days before she understood that she needs to work with Alona Alona and promote her and do some, and like make some concerts with her, because everybody's crazy about this girl. And that's how it went. The rest is history.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, because there's examples of this too. And this is so interesting, because it's, you know, music can build itself from being audio, but it is so much a visual component now, especially YouTube. And I talk and talk about YouTube because I've had the opportunity to work with some quite famous artists in India that have these crazy big followings. And I'm trying to relate that back into the westernized music industry, because it just feels like Western artists aren't really catching on to like the advantages of really gaining a huge following on YouTube, you know. And there was a girl who got really, really big during the pandemic, you know, like she's doing these songs in her ukulele. But what happened is that there was an event. So she had been doing these like videos for a while. And yeah, she was getting like, you know, tens of thousands in this. But once she did a collaboration with like a Bollywood star, all of a sudden it was hitting in now in the hundreds of thousands and millions. So there was like this one event during her career. And because I've talked to artists in Sweden and some other artists in Europe, and, you know, they're talking about really, you know, even though they can sell out live shows or like, you know, 500 capacity, 1500, that kind of thing, they're like, yeah, we really need to work on our social media. And I said, I don't know if social media works the same way. I think social media, like, it's a real dogfight if you're going to keep trying to gain followers, you know. Because you actually, I think it works more like you need something special to happen. And then from there, people just keep, you know, driving towards you, you know. What do you think about that?
Well, that's true, but it's also tricky, because sometimes musicians are caught up in this idea that I need to have as many followers as I can, and they're focused on this part of work. Whereas it's also important to keep the connection of already subscribed people. Mm. Like, you need to keep them engaged, entertained, involved in the communication, and make sure they're not unsubscribing because you're boring and you're doing doing nothing. So yes, having a momentum is definitely a thing, but it's also a matter of question, what's next?
Like, what a big what job. Are you
going to do afterwards?
I'm so glad I'm not a musician anymore. sorry, but it's, I mean, it, you know, and let's be honest, like it's evolved, you know, like being a musician in these days, it's just not the same job anymore. Like it has evolved, and it's either like you get on board with that, you know, and you try your best to go with that or suffer the consequences, I guess, you know, like that's the way it kind of seems, you know?
Absolutely. That's actually the way I distinguish the musician and the artist, because the musician is simply like, let me play or let me die, and that would be it. Whereas the artist is like more focused on the, at least on the creative part, you know, he's understanding that it's not just about the music, but there are also some other aspects that needs to be taken into account.
Well, let's circle back on the country of Ukraine for a moment. And tell me like about, I mean, I know you guys are working on the export, which is like, you know, getting bands out there. But what do you find it? Do you find there's good opportunity for artists to come inside the Ukraine and develop as well?
Short answer is yes. Long answer, basically, there are two ways to do that. Option number one, the artist should be known in Ukraine so that the booker would be more confident that there's a demand when it comes to the concert or furthermore, the tour of this artist. So that's one way around to do that. The second option is way more narrow and specific. However, it is still available in the market. It's basically when we're talking about non-famous artists yet, but they're playing either specific niche music that has some sort of demand. For example, a few years ago, in a pre-pandemic world, we had some concerts of Japanese psychedelic bands like Hikagaku Moya. We had Conan Makasin. Actually this spring, we had a performance of Turkish pop indie rock artists. So these are more specific, more niche. We're talking about hundreds of people here, but definitely when it comes to, again, young adults, there's definitely a need to discover new music in such way. On top of that, we also have some cultural organizations who are supporting the emerging artists importing their music here. For example, British Council for quite a while now are supporting emerging British artists to come and play in Ukraine in particular.
Wow.
So yeah, that's the way it goes right now.
Okay, so I mean, there's some elements there that are kind of noteworthy. And I mean, I guess it really matters about, and I mean, this kind of, I guess this might be, you know, globally the way things work is what kind of career you're trying to develop, really. I mean, you know, if you're playing some kind of comp, you know, some type of jazz music or world music, I mean, you're going to have a very different way of, you know, attending to your audience than you would say if you're trying to be a global pop star, maybe, you know? So, I mean, I think that's interesting because even though maybe the independent sector and the professional sector, it's a gray area now, you know, like who is what. But there's definitely not a gray area when it comes to genres, you know, like genres are still kind of exist. And even though I think the modern age kind of mixes that up a bit, I think it's still quite significant, you know, talking about it.
I'm so glad you're not asking me about music genres, actually, because that constantly fascinates me. Sometimes I'm talking about it with my foreign colleagues and they're like, oh, that's simple. My country is into hip hop. My country is into folk music. It's really hard to say the same about Ukraine because we have a very diverse market. And I think we have a lot of different niches and everybody finds something to listen to.
See that, I mean, that's super interesting as well. I mean, if I was to talk about, well, I've been living in Taiwan on and off for 2 years, and I can clearly say that the pop music industry rules this place. You know, it is pop music. It's light pop. And I couldn't say that about, you know, United States or Canada. I couldn't say that. But so that is interesting, right? That's totally interesting. I mean, you know, working in India, I know for sure that like movie music still rules India by like such a dominating presence, you know, where like westernized music or say independent music, or I don't know how you want to title that, rock, pop, rap, all that stuff, it's still kind of finding, trying to find its way inside of, you know, the popular culture. So I think it's really interesting to say that about Ukraine. You know, it's quite, you know, that's a great insight to have.
And then again, yeah, but then again, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Definitely mainstream and pop music is quite big simply because it has more media coverage. But I sincerely think there's more to that. And so I actually really like the idea you brought up, the definition of being successfully exported. So, and this is actually the same thing that I've been telling to our artists as well over and over again. Like, how do you know you're successfully exported your music abroad? The thing is, you don't, like, you don't know that for sure. It's a never-ending story. But in the end of the day, no matter how specific your music is, you're basically just scaling your fan community, you're scaling your career and things like that. So yeah, there's always a place and time for that.
I think you made a super valid point that I just want to touch on there, because you know, a couple of years ago I had Swedish artists that were coming into Canada to play at Canadian Music Week, and they were like, hey, like we'd like to do some touring around, you know, around Canadian Music Week in Eastern Canada. And they said, you know, we got really good numbers on Spotify in Montreal. You know, we have like 8,000 people following us in Montreal, you know, from our demographics. And I said, that's great, but like that literally doesn't mean anything. You know, like that doesn't, like I said, you still might make more money if you're busking on the street. You know, if you could find some way to message those 8,000 people and tell them you'll be on the street corner and to like throw money in your hat versus trying to put yourself in a venue, because I said it's like 8,000 people in a place or 2 million people listening to your song. It doesn't really tell us anything. And we know that from working with artists, right? Like they could have a big hit or they could have a semi hit, but it doesn't translate into people showing up at their shows. So it is two different realities. Like there's an online reality and there's a physical reality. And sometimes those two realities intersect, but they are, I think we have to talk about, like, they literally are two different places, right? Like,
yeah, true. Sounds like you're happy you're not a musician anymore, part two.
What about the countries around you guys? So there's, I mean, obviously you have you know, Russian culture is a big part of Ukraine culture historically. And I get like, I mean, I've seen you guys. I came and visited you guys last year for your export program. Or was that 2 years ago now? It was like
year. It was 2 years
ago. Oh my God. Oh my God. That's so weird. Okay. So, but I know what, like, so I'm from Western Canada. I got a whole bunch of things debunked being in Ukraine. Cause I was like, I grew up around a lot of, you know, Canadian Ukrainians in Western Canada. And I learned so much about how they, you know, Canadian Ukrainians have no idea what they're talking about because they're probably actually Polish, you know, so, but which is crazy. It is. I mean, I learned so many things being Ukraine. I was, you know, cause I mean, I stayed in Ukraine for about 3.5 weeks. I did some exploring and talking to people. So, but tell me about the relationships about the countries surrounding you. And I also know a lot of Ukrainians actually speak Russian, right? Is that correct? So can you tell me a little bit about that history and the culture and about the music, you know?
Yeah. So obviously we have common history when it comes to USSR. That's one of the reasons why many Ukrainians know Russian. However, there are many Ukrainians who actually consciously prefer to use Ukrainian nowadays instead, simply to to identify themselves with their own motherland more. But when it comes to the music environment, yes, historically, Ukrainian and Russian market used to be quite connected between each other. That was up until 2014, when we had first the Dignity Revolution, and then it was followed up by an armed conflict and the war, and basically when Russia annexed Crimea. So a lot of things changed ever since, because basically every Ukrainian artist had to come up with a decision what to do next if he or she is willing to export their music elsewhere. So the way I see it, two things happened. Part of the Ukrainian artists decided that they're not willing to have anything in common with Russian music industry. So they decided to stay in Ukraine and look for some other opportunities. Whereas others still consider to be Russian music industry more interesting, more wealthy, and useful for them. So I know that some Ukrainian artists actually had to literally relocate. So they are now living in Moscow or in St. Petersburg, and they're mainly working in Russia. However, practically, you cannot do both approaches. It doesn't work like that. And what is important here, it doesn't work like that, not from the official restrictions, but from the people's approach. Like Ukrainians, we're not getting this kind of stuff. How come you are working towards the country aggressor? That doesn't work like that. And the narrative that music unifies us all, no, you need to choose. You need to be more conscious and know what you're doing and what you're standing up for. So that's the way it goes in terms of these kind of relationships. When it comes to other countries, I think it makes sense to highlight Belarus and Poland. Like historically, we also have quite good relationships with Belarusian music market, and we have some Belarusian acts actually quite popular in Ukraine and vice versa. But the most interesting from my perspective would be the Polish market, because despite we're neighbors and Poland has a pretty big Ukrainian diaspora, musically, our markets are not that tightly connected yet. Like, if you will randomly stop Ukrainian people on the street and ask them to tell, like, to list at least one popular Polish artist, I don't think somebody will answer that. So there's definitely quite a room for improvements here.
That's incredibly interesting. And I, you know, thank you for your sincerity there. Cause I mean, I can kind of relate to that a little bit in certain ways. Like in Canada, we have two official languages, Canadian and French. And I mean, outside of the political and, I guess violence and all that kind of stuff, but it's just like, you don't take your English music and try to go into Quebec. You know, you just don't. I mean, you can, but it's like, or take your English music and try to go build your band in France. Like, it just doesn't really make any sense unless you have something there to attach yourself to, you know, I mean, French.
Yeah. I think there's more than just the matter of language. Actually, it's also about like historical and social approach nowadays, okay. But I get your point.
I think it's important that we know that too. I mean, I guess the thing is like, you know, you want the best for Ukrainian artists, obviously, and you have to be, you're very conscientious of that. So, I mean, that's, you know, these are valid, very valid points. And I don't think I can really appreciate it as much, or I don't think any foreigners can appreciate it as much unless we're really learning about, you know, why Ukrainian people would feel that way, you know, and I think that's also super important too, because the fact that, you know, Ukraine has a separate identity, I think that I think that's going to take more time to be revealed and for people to learn about, you know, just how separate the identities are.
Yeah, well, it's like sometimes you have to choose whether you are conscious about your roots and about your place in a society, or you're just chasing money and like money don't smell. I don't think I'm not sure if you translate that properly, but there's like a wording in Ukraine, like Russia, like money don't smell. I'm really not into this kind of stuff. That's why actually in Music Export Ukraine, we're not working with Russian music market at all. Like we don't have any partners here and things like that.
Okay. That's super interesting. And so, I mean, when you talk about export, like what you guys do inside of the music industry, like what, like, I know we touched on Belarus, we touched on Poland. What countries are really interesting for you and why is that? Like, is there partly an English music industry in Ukraine at all? Or is it mostly centered around the Ukrainian language? Like, how does that work?
Well, officially, we don't have any geographical limitations except for Russia. But the way I see it right now, we mostly cooperate with countries that are either our neighbors or have Ukrainian diaspora, simply because they're the first supporters, the first helpers to spread the word.
When it comes to export, when it comes to the countries around you, you know, we talked about Poland, you know, is a kind of a close association. Belarus is a close association. And what are some of the countries that, Music Export Ukraine is interested in? And why are you interested in them? Let's talk about that for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of the activities that take place for the export office, we don't have any limitations apart from the Russian market, as I mentioned earlier. However, practically, I can see that in most of the cases, we are working with our neighboring countries or countries that have a Ukrainian diaspora, simply because these people are our first supporters and helpers to spread the word and help us to promote Ukrainian music. So that's the way it goes in the majority of cases. And what's also important is actually the language question part two, because sometimes Ukrainian artists ask me about this thing, actually, like, do I need to sing in English in order to be export ready? My opinion, they don't, because sometimes a different language can be a part of artist's storytelling, his character, and so on. And actually singing in Ukrainian or in Cheburish actually may work even better. Probably the best example here would be Ukrainian band called Daha Bracha. They're singing
Daha, like, Bracha.
Yes. Daha Bracha.
Okay.
Exactly. That's like give and take. Daha Bracha.
Okay, very nice.
yes. So yeah, the majority of their songs are in Ukrainian and they're actually singing traditional Ukrainian songs while playing drums and percussion, which sounds crazy, but you would definitely want to check them out because they're amazing. And yes, the majority of people cannot get a thing if they're performing abroad, but they're amazing the way they are. So,
and I think really there's, I think you really touched on something important, and that's kind of like the spirit of music, right? Like there's definitely something inside of that on entertainment value. And I mean, of course, like, it just all depends. It depends how, I mean, music is like, of course, it's, you know, there's it can be intellectualized, but I think it's also an emotion. And I think that's, yeah, it's really important, especially when we're talking about the global music industry, about people, touring and trying to get into different regions is also, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like how it makes you feel. And, it is interesting because it's so hard to have that discussion because it's so mysterious, you know, like why. some music just doesn't work and some music just does, you know, it's mysterious. Yeah,
it's the X factor in a way. Like, when you know it, you know it.
So what you're saying is that, you know, with your export initiative, there's, you guys are kind of open to see where the opportunity is. Is that fair to say that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's true.
Let's talk about some Ukrainian artists that you really think that people should be paying attention to. And I don't care if they're already huge, because I know like there's a band called Ginger that comes out of, you know, that comes out of Ukraine. They're huge metal act, you know, I mean, they have a huge metal following. And actually at your Music Export Ukraine, I actually met their agent. We did a panel on Asia, actually. So that was really cool. Whether they're independent or they're already kind of being successful, like give me five artists that we need to, you know, keep our eyes on coming out of Ukraine.
Do you want me simply to name drop them and that would be it?
No, well, maybe like name drop them and give us a little, like just a little, you know, why you think that's important.
Well, maybe I'd like to name drop more emerging artists.
Sure.
Because they definitely require more visibility here. So five of them. That would be definitely for sure. They're into R&B. Yes, Faux Show.
Oh, like the Ebonics, like Faux Show, like that. Faux Show, like that. You mean?
In a way.
Okay. Faux Show, like New York slang. Okay, I got you. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So these are three sisters born and raised in Ukraine. However, the moment you see them, you would never tell that. So I encourage you to Google Faux Show and check it out on your own.
Okay, so there's one. Give us another one.
The next one would be Raga Pop. That's actually an emerging artist. And what's interesting about them, they're mixing music with the lyrics created by famous Ukrainian poets. So that's like an eclectic mix of
everything. That's amazing. So that's a super cultural component. Like, not only are they doing music, but they're trying to expose, you know, Ukrainian poetry. Is that fair to say?
That's true. And rhythmically, honestly, I was mesmerized the moment I heard their debut single. They are really, really good.
Wow. So that's Raga. So we have Faux Show and we have Raga Pop.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So is there a connotation for that Raga? Like, does it mean anything, Raga Pop? Or is it like, okay, it's not like a Ukrainian word or anything like that, right?
No.
Okay. Because there's actually a genre of music in India called raga. So it's actually like a style of music. Am I making that up? I don't know. No, I swear. I can't remember the correct terminology right now. But anyways. Okay. Number three. Let's go to number three.
Okay. So number three would be Dzob. Dzob. Yes.
Dzob. Dzob.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about them.
I'm not sure how to explain that. And maybe you will cut it off, but the bird does like that. Boom. Like punch.
Like a woodpecker hitting the tree. Dzob.
Yes. That's
so it's kind of like. Okay. Okay. Don't hurt yourself.
Okay. The connotation of a bird doing a punch is hilarious. Bird's punch. Boom. Okay. So the next band is Dzob. They are actually playing electroacoustic music. So they are a bunch of professional musicians, but they're willing to do more than just classical bougie stuff. And they're into mixing the classical approach with electronics and finding some new sounds. And they actually don't have lyrics, so it's quite international. And very exportable, I think.
Oh my God, I can't even think of the word. So they don't have lyrics. Like they're a musical band.
Instrumental.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks for helping me with my English. number four. Give me number four.
Okay.
This is a good game. I should play this with everybody. This is great.
Yeah, and I actually like that I have to explain each and every option that I make. Okay, so I think it makes sense to cover the electronic music scene, and definitely we have quite a lot of good artists here. Just to name one, my pick would be Koloa.
Koloa.
Yes, that's a one-man band, a DJ, a composer, and he actually has quite a lot of alter egos. So sometimes he releases a music under a completely different name. Like, for example, one of his alter ego is Voinaruvo, I think. But that's the way it goes. You can Google Koloa and check him out.
And that's electronic dance music?
Yeah, in a way. However, I absolutely adore his I think he released an album last year, and that was actually a cooperation with a Ukrainian saxophone player. Okay. So it was very like dreamy atmosphere. Like I was so into it. You definitely need to check it out. I think we're about to create a separate playlist after that.
Okay.
in case you're down for that, I will do that. Okay. The last thing we definitely need to talk about rock, or like at least indie rock in a way. So in this case, The Unsleeping is definitely my selection. They are young, they are crazy. There is something wrong about them. You can tell that the moment you see them on the stage.
Wrong, special.
yeah. But like, you know, the way they behave on stage, you're like, wow. Like there's definitely something happening out there. I will send you a live video afterwards. You'll know what I'm talking about. But okay,
we want to talk about faux show, ragapop, zob, Koloa,
yes,
and The Unsleeping. So yeah, okay, well that's super interesting, and hopefully whoever's listening to this, if anyone listens this far, maybe they'll want to check them out.
And please also check Dacha Bracha and Alona Alona, which we name dropped earlier. They're also definitely worth being listened. They're amazing.
Okay. And so let's, we'll wrap this up. I got one more question for you. And I think this might be the most, either the easiest or the most difficult question for you to answer. And I think, what's the best part and what's the best parts and the most difficult parts about what you're doing? And what are some of the challenges operating, you know, Music Export Ukraine?
That's funny that we have to wrap it up on such question, because initially I said that we are an independent initiative. And that's true. Like, unlike the majority of expert offices existing out there, we're not government funded. So that's literally both good and bad thing. The bad part of it is because we constantly need to search for funding in order to make sure our activities are sustainable enough and we can literally do something. But on another hand, it's also good because we are very flexible, like project-wise, cooperation-wise, and we had a chance to check it last year. I mean, when the lockdown began. For us, it was a matter of a week or so when we're like, okay, so we're not doing this and this and this. Okay, how about doing that and that and that? And yeah, and we did it. For example, last year we had an Eastern European Music Academy. It took us 3 months to do that, and we had around 50 artists and music managers from 8 countries actually studying together, cooperating together. That wouldn't have happened without the pandemic, actually. So we're quite happy that we did it. But that was actually a matter of flexibility that we had. So that's both good and bad thing.
So yeah, that is, I mean, that is quite interesting because, I mean, obviously, you know, like, you know, I do operate under government funding for the conference in Canada, also the one in Sweden, actually. But I mean, in Sweden, it's like regional, whereas in the one in Canada is federal. And I mean, like, they're not too overbearing, but like, we do have things that we have to concentrate on. And, you know, I have also interviewed some export offices around the world too. And the truth is that the ones that are government funded is that they're handed a list of countries that the government wants them to work with. Right. I mean, and I think we should talk about that openly. Whereas in, like, you know, privatization, like what you're doing, you might have a lot more room. But the problem also is, like, on the government side, like, you don't have the, maybe on the private side you do, but on the government side, or sorry, on the private side, maybe it's more difficult to have a salary, you know, like a year-round security. So you're, you know, I really respect what you're doing. And I really respect that, you know, like, you have to really kind of put yourself out there in order for it to be, you know, worth money and to, I mean, to survive in this marketplace, you know, like, you really, I mean, you know, talking to you, I can tell you, you have a really in-depth amount of knowledge about, you know, your own country and the musicians in it, and also about the general music industry. So, I mean, it's, I think people, like, when you're talking about how things are still developing in Ukraine, I think it's a big advantage for, you know, for someone like you to be living there and for people to be able to talk to and go to for information or consulting. What are, like, I guess when we go back to challenges now, and I, you know, like, what kind of, what are some of the other challenges that you're finding? Like, I mean, like, we're talking about, you know, the fact that you're working privately, so you have to create all this hustle in order to, like, work with private companies and such. Is there, like, what are the kind of challenges are you facing?
Well, besides that, definitely one of the things we're dealing with is that Ukrainian music was definitely underrepresented abroad. Actually, that was one of the reasons we started the export office in the first place. Like, a few years ago, I participated in one of the European music conferences, and I was the only delegate in Ukraine. And
well, I met you in Sweden in 2018, yeah. Right?
Yes. And
I had no idea. Like, I think you were the only person from Ukraine there too. Right?
Yes, that's true. But at that point, I was already prepared for that.
Okay.
Back in the days, I was like, wow, how is that? Nobody knows Ukraine. I'm the only person from Ukraine. And everybody's like, wow, so you exist. Good for you. So
literally... No, I don't mean to laugh, but it's kind of ridiculous.
No, but that's true. Yeah. I literally felt like I'm an alien. I had to pinch myself over and over again to, like, yes, I do exist. I'm not dreaming. That's happening. So that was actually my huge pain point. And that was the moment I decided that we need to change that. Like, people need to know about Ukrainian music. And definitely, I don't think that's true solely for the Ukrainian music industry. I think a lot of emerging markets face this kind of problem, that you have to persuade people in a way that what you're doing is cool enough and it's worth being listened to. So yeah, sometimes I feel like I need to chase people and like scream out loud, Ukraine is amazing. You need to check out these bands. But the moment you do, you actually know that they're cool and they're amazing. So it's definitely worth it.
Right. So you have kind of the, you know, like no matter what you say, you have the stuff to back it up. Right. So like you're, I guess that must make you very proud too. Like you must be very proud to represent people from your country and to be on the forefront of kind of, you know, fighting the good fight, right? To kind of be like an international ambassador and try to let people know that it's out there. Is there a hope that you can connect with government in the future, or do you want to stay away from that?
That is a good question. We actually really like the flexibility that we have. However, it is our pleasure to cooperate here and there with different organizations. For example, we have the Ukrainian Institute. It is created by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So they are in charge of promoting Ukrainian culture in general abroad, like different aspects of it. So we often cooperate together when it comes to the like mainstream non-classical music. So that's one of our connection points here and there. And we really appreciate such partnership.
Yeah, that's this is happening in Western countries too, where there's these like separated, you know, like when we talk about music unions, let's say, for instance, I'll take this as an example. Like I'm going to be doing an interview with some music unions around the world, actually, in the next coming week. And one of the most interesting things, kind of talking to one of the music union representatives, they don't really work with anybody in like the pop music industry or the rock music industry. Like it's really like based on like contemporary, like classical music, or like more in like a scholarly, you know, like the whole entire like institutionalized music industry. And that's because like they have to basically like, you know, do contracts between other countries and stuff, you know? So, whereas in like, you know, pop music or like, yeah, popularized music or like everybody music, let's say, is like, you know, there's a lot more gray area. And I'm kind of like really confused about this too, because since some governments throw such a large amount of money into export or into the development of artists, like it's hard to believe it's not regimented. You know what I mean? If you're working for an export office in one of the export offices in Canada, like you don't really have a regimen besides like, hey, we think you should like, you know, can you please try to export in these countries? But like, if you don't like someone personally, like you can just like cut them out. You know what I mean? Like there's so much of that in the music industry. Like so many people personalize their roles, and it's like they use that government money like it's their own, you know? And so I don't mean to go on a tangent about this, but it's just so weird how like you're dealing with hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, and it's just not regulated, you know, the way you think it would be, like say healthcare money is, or, you know, or like, you know, money for anything else, you know? So, let me touch on that for a minute. Like, how do you recognize someone knows what they're talking about? Like you go to a conference, okay, and everyone's wearing these badges. And I mean, this has happened to me so many times. I'm like, I start engaging in a conversation with somebody, and I start realizing like, why is this person wearing a badge? Like, why is this person a delegate, or what are they doing that's, you know, differentiating them from like being a musician or just being somebody that is here because they found out a way to get a badge? Like, talk to me about that. Like the professionalism of the music industry.
That's actually a very good question, Ivan. How do I recognize the professional? Well, first of all, I do my homework. I professionally Google people and check their profiles. No, but I do. And that actually helps. Like the moment you are physically at the conference, you already know at least part of the people who are there,
and or some background, right? Yeah.
So you know the precondition that you're dealing with. And then if you don't and you just meet randomly people, you check their profiles afterwards.
Right.
but there's, honestly, I'm joking, but there's actually some truth to that. And on top of that, I usually notice that the professionals are thinking both ways. Like, they're never communicating in a way, can you offer me something, like do something for me? They're also here for you and they're willing to support you and they're asking, is there a way that you're helpful? So the connections like that, I think they are the most valuable ones, actually.
Yeah. And I mean, there's another aspect to this too. I mean, there's, like, I was talking with Andy Jones the other day from Focus Wales, and one of the things he talked about was, we had a discussion about the delegate aspect, and part of the discussion about that delegate aspect was, like, a lot of conferences like to bring these people in who did, like, some major work in the 80s or the early 90s, and, you know, they're kind of like just like storytelling people because they can't really do much anymore, or like their whole way of understanding the music industry is so outdated. And, you know, this is a big problem in Canada. I'm just going to say this outright because it's the truth. Like, when we go into export or when we go into the music industry insight and understanding, there's just a lot of people working in the music industry that have government money that really have a 1995 understanding of the music industry. Are you finding this, like, in Europe as well? Are you finding this in your network? I mean, the people that you want to meet, what kind of people are they that you want to meet? And I promise this is the last question and we'll wrap it up.
Well, I agree on your point that actually there's a huge range of industry professionals that have a completely different background, but both from a professional perspective and from the history perspective in a way. But then again, it's always a matter of your needs and vision on the development. For example, actually, there was one person that you've just described, like, started in 80s or even earlier on, and he was a major superstar at the conference, telling and sharing the wisdom of his life to everybody. And everyone was mesmerized by his story and very inspired. But we get the idea, like, there's nothing much we can actually do together, like, we cannot cooperate or do stuff. However, I met him after his speech and we had a wonderful conversation, and actually he was one of the first people who ever told me that I should do the expert office and create one in my country, because he was like looking at me and saying, like, okay, I just know it is you. Like, if that's not you, who would that be? And actually, I believed him. And that was one of the best moments at the conference I ever had. Like, when you know, you know. And I really appreciate him for saying that.
Right. Maybe, I mean, that's quite significant.
Maybe that's not the thing you wanted to hear. But that is true.
Right. So, I mean... Yes. It's kind of a good way, because I mean, the thing is, it is that kind of mysterious how all this works. Like I said, like there's no handbook. I know some people have written books, not everyone reads them. There's no unified understanding of the music industry. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, even if you have this philosophical idea from 1980, or you have this philosophical idea from 2020, you're still interacting with the same people. It's absolutely mind-numbing, you know?
So. Exactly. As we discussed, you need to be an extrovert to keep this thing going and see what will happen. It's actually one of the things I really miss being in an offline conference, is the ability to meet and talk to random people and knowing that you have zero commitment to each other. Like, we've just met and we're hanging around.
Sounds like Tinder.
Well,
sorry, I'm just kidding.
But, like, You know, like, if we're talking to each other, does that mean something? Like, do we need to work together now? Mm. Probably we don't. We're just hanging around. And then in a year or so, you're like best friends, you're partners now. And I feel like this kind of approach really changed ever since we had this kind of idea of the online conferences. Nowadays, yes, we do have an online delegates database, but each time I'm writing a message to a delegate, I feel like there's something more to that, you know? Like, what's the reason for me to contact him? What's the reason for us to have this kind of conversation? And actually, I decided to do something different last time I was at the Great Escape, the online edition. I literally wrote a dozens of messages to the relevant delegates saying things like, hey, like, I'm Darta from Music Expert Ukraine. I found your work very interesting. Do you want to have a virtual coffee? Let's have a Zoom call. That means nothing, but maybe you want to chat. Maybe you just want to hang out. And the majority of delegates absolutely loved it. We had the zero commitment Zoom calls together. And it was actually great.
Where you were just sharing coffee recipes, right?
and constantly tapping each other and saying, like, hang in there. We're in this together. We're doing it. So, yeah. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to get back into the offline world.
Well, no, absolutely. And, like, I just want to say, like, you know, I really love the time I spent in Ukraine, in Kyiv. I really, really enjoyed it. I met lots of nice people. I found it absolutely completely different than the rest of Europe, the places in Europe I had been. And I really found out that Canadian Ukrainians aren't really Ukrainian after all. But I just wanted to say thank you very much, Darcia. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I think you have such a world of knowledge and you have a really good base of understanding of what you're, you know, I just think you're a great person to talk to about the industry. And I think you got a solid foundation of information. So thanks very much. And I'll be posting this and, you know, looking back on it with a fond memory. So thank you very much, Darcia.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Take care. See you.
Bye.